Welcome indeed to the PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Paul Craig Roberts. It's great to have Paul back. There's always so much that Paul and I are able to discuss on the program. And Paul, in his own writing and his own work, manages to touch on so many of the vital core issues, domestic ones, foreign ones, geopolitical ones. Paul, I welcome you back. You've been writing on some of the same things that I have. Maybe we can talk a little bit about what's going on with the massive spying apparatus America conducts. It really isn't new news, Paul. It's been going on for a long time. We owe a great debt to Edward Snowden because maybe thousands of people in America knew about it before. Now many millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions know about it globally. Well, Snowden made that possible. Paul, welcome.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Stephen.
Paul, it's a joy to have you on. It really is a joy. And again, I repeat, you're on these cutting-edge issues, so I'll let you talk about the things that you've been writing about.
Well, you know, I think the most important thing to talk about is the Snowden affair. And what I think here is that far more important than the spy revelations that he revealed has been the way Washington has so badly mishandled the situation, because instead, you know, Washington caught with his hand in the cookie jar, devouring the privacy of the entire world, and unable to acknowledge its illegal behavior and apologize. Instead, it has done far more damage to itself than occurred from Snowden's revelation, because it has proven conclusively that Washington has no respect for anyone's human rights, no respect for any country's sovereignty, no respect for any moral principle, especially those that it most often mouths, and then it relies on coercion, threats, and violence alone. So Washington has shown conclusively that it is the enemy of the entire world. That's what's come out of this. And also, the American media has shown that it has no ethics whatsoever, and that nothing it says can be believed. That extraordinary Washington Post, you know, the Washington Post is the Stasi state's favorite whore. It's always been regarded as a CIA asset. I remember when I was in the congressional staff in the 1970s, it was taken for granted that the Washington Post was a CIA asset. This utterly unethical paper denounced Rafael Correa as the autocratic leader of tiny, impoverished Ecuador, an autocratic leader three times democratically elected. The paper just so blatantly prostitutes itself. I mean, everybody knows the guy's been elected three times by majority vote. And so he's autocratic.
And the reason, Paul, for listeners who don't know about Rafael Correa gave Anthony Snowden refugee status, but I believe it's been done short of an official piece of paper in his hand saying this is exactly what was done. Ecuador's law also cannot give asylum unless somebody is on Ecuadorian soil. Well, it gave it to Julian Assange in London because he is on Ecuadorian soil. He's in their embassy. Well, nobody knows for sure where Snowden is, Paul. We think he's in the interim area. The area that you disembark from when you land in Moscow, which is officially not Russian territory because you have not yet cleared customs.
I've yeah, only cleared I understand
customs a few times, so it's hard for me to remember that. But I did a year and a half ago when I went to Mexico. So when I disembarked in Mexico City, I wasn't yet in Mexico until I went through the system, passed the people who vetted me and so on, looked over my papers and passport, moved me on, and then I was in Mexico. Officially, well, that's the way it works, I guess, at least in most countries.
Yeah,
but Korea stood up courageously for Snowden, and he basically boxed America's ears. He rubbed America's nose, Paul, in America's filth by preempting its canceling its favorite trade relations. Well, it really didn't amount to that much, about $23 million, and it was due to expire at the end of July. Well, Korea preempted Obama and just summarily canceled it with a very pointed comment about it. That's the way things stand now. He's a heroic guy for what he did.
Well, I thought what was most extraordinary about it was that the communications minister offered Washington the $23 million, that Ecuador would give Washington foreign aid in order to provide human rights training to combat torture, illegal executions, and attacks on people's privacy.
Well, in an article that I got out mentioning him, I said, well, what a marvelous gesture, but I'm afraid to reform Washington, you're going to need billions. $23 million just won't do it.
Well, but he's making a point.
He's making a point, of course.
You know, the reason they don't like Carrera is that when he was first elected, you know, he is an economist. He was educated in Belgium and the United States.
University of Illinois, I believe.
And when he was elected president, I think toward the end of 2006 and assumed office in January of 2007, the end of the second year, he repudiated the national debt of Ecuador. He said that it was an illegitimate debt contracted by corrupt and despotic prior regimes who had sold out the country to the Washington bankers or the American bankers. And so he announced that Ecuador was defaulting on $3 billion in bonds. And he said he would fight the creditors in their national courts. So since he had such a good case, the creditors had to reduce the debt by 60%. So, in other words, all the money they had paid the corrupt regimes that Washington had supported to contract debts that poured money into the coffers of the international bankers, they lost it because they had to write down the debt by 60%. And that's why they've always hated him, because he didn't. You see, what Washington always expects when they have a government under their thumb is that that government loots its own people for the benefit of the American financial system. That's what the IMF was always used for. The IMF, when a country gets indebted, it goes in and says, okay, now you throw everybody out of work so they don't have any money and can't buy anything. And so that means you can deliver all those resources to your foreign creditors. That's what an IMF adjustment program is. And what they prefer is that they just get the government to loot the country without having to have an adjustment program. So that's why he's disliked and by the Americans, because he did not go along with the scheme, which all the rest of them go along with, except, of course, Chavez didn't go along with it. And that is just never reported. It's just not part of of the folklore. So now we have this guy, democratically elected three times by majorities. I mean, not, you know, large majorities in most cases. And the Washington Post says that he's an autocrat. So when you have the newspaper and the capital of the United States blatantly telling a lie that every other country has to know is a lie, what has the Post done to its credibility? I say it no longer has any. And what credibility does the United States have when it tries to threaten tiny, impoverished Ecuador and get slapped down? If Ecuador can stand up to the United States, then surely China can, or Russia, or Iran, maybe even our NATO puppet states will have had enough. And start
I wrote about the Washington Post
and
editorial.
Quit selling out their own peoples to Washington. You know, the British government has sold out the British people to Washington. The Merkel government in Germany has sold out the German government to Washington. The French government has sold out to Washington because they all get money. And at some point, people have to have had enough. I was very encouraged when I saw the main German magazine, Der Spiegel's response to the Snowden affair. It said, well, and we thought America was our friend, and we thought our government represented us. Instead, it represents Washington. And now we know if Washington is our friend, we don't need enemies. Now, this was published in the lead news magazine of Germany. So people may be waking up. Maybe what's really happened out of Snowden is not the spy revelations is the most important, but that it shows Washington for what it is. And the world loses all of its illusions and delusions and realizes that Washington is a huge concentration of evil and evil intent against the rest of the world. I think that's what has come out of the threatening, bullying response to Snowden. You know, an intelligent government, which we do not have, would have quickly realized that it was exposed for the all to see and would have apologized and said, well, we didn't know that they were going this far, and we're stopping this right now. They would have told all kinds of lies and apologized. Of course, they would have kept on doing it. But by making an apology and claiming they were going to investigate how it got out of hand, and then the world would have sort of said, okay, it's being taken care of. But instead, they're so arrogant, so full of hubris, they couldn't admit they had done anything wrong. So they start these threats and bullying, threatening China, threatening Russia, threatening Cuba, threatening Ecuador. They even threatened Venezuela. They threatened anybody that would in any way give any aid or support to Snowden for his heroic deed. And this was a huge miscalculation, because the result is that tiny Ecuador, which probably couldn't defeat the New York Police Department, it's got no fear. It says we don't accept threats from anybody. So I think this will embolden the rest of the world, and that the American threats that have been so effective will lose effectiveness. With any luck, that'll be the outcome. And if so, we'll be spared the world war that Washington is driving the world toward with its arrogance and hubris and concern only with the narrow moneyed interests that govern the place.
Paul, it's absolutely true. The only two countries that have the muscle to go up against Washington, and there is nothing Washington can do substantively, really, to retaliate. The two countries, of course, are Russia and China, and Putin in Russia certainly stands up. They both do it diplomatically for the most part, but I quoted stuff in the Chinese press, China Morning Post, Xinhua, very, very pointed, sharp, critical comments of Washington, much, much harsher than what Putin said. I mean, Putin has made some pointed comments, and there was no ambiguity about what he said and what he meant, but he did it for the most part diplomatically, and some of the Chinese comments after Hong Kong was attacked for releasing Snowden. Russia has more legitimacy to do it because it has no extradition treaty with Washington. Hong Kong has an extradition treaty. But Hong Kong's law matters most, and the law is very deliberative. I wrote about Hong Kong law. I'm certainly no expert in it, but I wrote about it at least well enough to explain to readers that Hong Kong justice takes a long time. I gave an example of a woman who committed murder, and her case dragged on for 10 years, and it's still under appeal as far as I could tell. So if a murder, and maybe there was clear evidence that this woman was guilty, I honestly don't know, but let's assume it was, justice in Hong Kong takes its time, wants to get it right, and Hong Kong, which is under China, one country, two systems, although China has complete control over foreign policy, Hong Kong basically thumbed its nose at Washington because there was something wrong with the extradition request. All the T's weren't crossed and I's weren't dotted, I guess, Paul. And Hong Kong wanted more explicit stuff included that wasn't, and Washington has had a hissy fit over this. Well, they did what they should have done. Well, I hope you're right, Paul. I hope more nations are emboldened to do what Ecuador did. It's a tiny country, population maybe about the size of New York City. Certainly doesn't have any kind of military might to go up against Washington. Washington is very easily able to punish it. Venezuela acts the same way. We need other countries to do this. If we could get a snowball effect started, it would never be stopped, and the great hegemon of the modern-day era would be brought to its knees, and there wouldn't be a damn thing it could do about it.
Yes, I think that this at least makes it clearer to most of the rest of the world that they're all in danger, and what they're primarily in danger from is, by not resisting Washington, they allow it to drive the world to world war, which, of course, would be nuclear and would mean, given the potency of the weapons, would literally mean the destruction of human life, probably all life, all animal life. In fact, maybe of everything, because, you know, the effect of the weapons in producing what they call nuclear darkness, you know, it just blacks out light. The whole thing is risky because people are the leaders of other countries saying, well, they'll make me rich. You know, the electorates can be fickle and I may not be here long, but if I do what Washington wants, they'll give me lots of money.
Paul, I wrote briefly about Helen Caldicott's description of nuclear winter. It's a very, very chilling piece of reality, and she knows a lot about explaining it accurately scientifically.
Right.
I mentioned on this program before Hyman Rickover's testimony to Congress back in the 1980s. He was the father of the nuclear navy, and he basically said, if there is another war with combatants of the potency of countries like China and America, countries that have the power, weapons nuclear weapons, literally to wipe out humanity, he basically said to them in long testimony, there is no question that these countries will use every weapon at their disposal to win the war, to defend themselves. And he reflected on history, saying, the history of the world says that when countries go to war, they use everything they've got, unless they can just walk over another country with minimal effort. And those are usually the ones that Washington goes to war against, pushovers, walkovers. But if there's ever a confrontation with Russia and China, then what you're saying is an absolute possible reality, that we'll see a nuclear war, and if there is, it's curtains.
That's right. And you see, in all these stupid European countries, the NATO allies are enabling that because they provide cover for American aggression. You see, if it weren't for Tony Blair, I mean, and they rewarded Tony Blair. You know, 1 year out of office, he's worth £35 million. So what's that, $50 million. So Washington paid Blair $50 million to lie to his own government about weapons of mass destruction and the threat to England, so that Washington had the cover of British support, making it look like it really was a threat and not something that Washington was up to on its own. They do this everywhere. And all these countries, by going along with it, like NATO fighting America's war in Afghanistan, America's war in Libya, when they go along, these stupid, corrupt European governments, when they go along with this, they push us each step closer to confrontation with the Russians and the Chinese. And they, what is the matter with them? They sell out the whole life of the earth for some measly American dollars. And people need to realize that's what the governments of Europe are. They're Washington's whores. And they're selling out humanity for a few million dollars.
They sure
this
are.
Realization needs to be driven home. Without NATO, Washington's power would simply disappear. It wouldn't be able to surround Russia with missile bases. It wouldn't have cover for its aggressive actions. All this is provided by the corrupt European governments that Washington buys. And they, each one of them, they'd rather have a few million dollars now at the cost of life on Earth. That's what they are.
It's a sad state of affairs, Paul, and it's a very, very scary. I've never been more scared in my life than I am now. We both lived through the Cold War. The only time the Cold War ever scared me, Paul, was when I was a little kid, and I didn't really know the difference. And we used to have drills back in grammar school, you know, just in case something happened, you know, duck and cover, that kind of stuff. We had a fire escape on my grammar school. We used to have drills when we'd go down to the fire escape into the schoolyard. Well, it was almost like a game for a young kid. What was that, 8, 9, 10 years old, something like that. Maybe 11 years old. I wasn't really old enough to understand, was there a real threat? Wasn't there a real threat? Well, mutual assured destruction, MAD, saved us. Neither side was going to lob nuclear weapons against the other, but there were crazies, at least in America, and I guess there were crazies in the Soviet Union as well, who thought it might be a good idea to do it. Just get the jump on the other side. Hit them hard before they know what happened, before they can retaliate. Well, of course, doing that assures there'll be some retaliation.
The Joint Chiefs tried to force on President Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
They did. The Joint Chiefs did try to start a nuclear war. They wanted to attack Russia before it had reliable delivery systems for its nuclear weapons.
Curtis LeMay
so
was
they actually did intend to launch a preemptive nuclear attack on the Soviet Union. Kennedy blocked it, which is one of the reasons that they had him assassinated. So we came very close, and they used the communist threat. It was largely hype, just like the Muslim threat is hype. If you read Oliver Stone's new book, The Untold History of the United States, you will see that the Soviet threat was 90% hype, that Stalin himself kept the agreements he made, that Khrushchev did not want any sort of threatening situation with the United States, and did what he could to normalize relations, and that's another reason that Kennedy was assassinated, because he and Khrushchev were working behind the scenes to normalize relations and end the Cold War in the early 1960s. And something that could not be done until the late 1980s, you know, almost 30 years later with Reagan and Gorbachev, and against powerful opposition from the military security complex in the United States. So the Cold War was an artifact designed to support the profits of the armaments industries and the power of the CIA. And that's what kept it going. And you can, if you read Stone's book, this becomes clear. It really does. It's just totally clear. The whole thing was just another deception. It was pointless. We were told all those years that all the Soviets were after us, this, that, and the other, is all a total lie. It was a total lie. In other words, everything in our history appears to be a total lie.
Paul, it really was. I think after Stalin was gone, it was uphill from the Soviet Union, and it was same old from here. Absolutely, Kennedy wanted the Cold War ended. He wanted nuclear weapons destroyed. He wanted American forces out of Vietnam. He wanted Palestinians recognized. He deplored the notion that Israel was building a nuclear arsenal. He talked about it. He wanted them to get rid of their bombs. He said things that the establishment absolutely wouldn't tolerate. And you're right, all of these things mounted up, and they killed him. They killed him. They wouldn't tolerate a president who stood up for the things that are right. They wanted the same old stuff that's been going on since.
They wanted the money. The money. He was in the way of money. If, you know, Kennedy didn't take that position until late. He learned from the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Bay of Pigs and everything else of what was really going on. And that made him realize that the country was really in the grips of these secret agencies and the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower had warned about. So when he saw what was happening, it scared him to death. And he knew that he couldn't do anything until he was reelected, because the CIA would use all its assets in the media, such as the Washington Post, to attack him for selling out the country to the Russians, for not opposing godless communism, for not doing. He told his brother and members of his government that I can stop them from starting a war. I think, though there could be a coup, he said, but I can't bust this up until I'm reelected, because they'll turn the American people against me and I'll lose the election. So that was the situation. I think every American is so brainwashed, and they're just naturally gullible, aren't they? I mean, they fall for every kind of snake oil salesman, whether it's goods or whether it's politics.
True enough, Paul. Afraid we're out of time. I look forward to getting you back again to talk about more. Quick comment. Kennedy was my commencement speaker as a senator in 1956. I wrote about what he said. Politicians don't talk that way today. We need more Kennedys around. Paul, many thanks.
Pleasure to speak with you.
Join us Saturday, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.